You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
To you, Mike McNamara, for a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I hope you're having a good day wherever you are. I am. I was. Again, good morning. Good morning to you. Did post-traumatic winning yesterday down at Camp Pendleton. And, you know, it's, the presentation, always evolves. And so we'll talk about that. But, if you've been in the Marine Corps, I think today is a day that, in our history that we always take time. It changed the Marine Corps, what happened in Beirut, on October 23rd, 1983, I was at Officer Candidate School, and you know, it was the first time I'd ever experienced seeing people that wore the uniform that I wore, dead bodies stacked and in that uniform, the red PT shorts I wore. You know, you saw pictures of Marines being dragged out of that rubble, some dead, some alive, wearing those shorts. And honestly, I mean, it's changed the Marine Corps and the way we look at our own security forever. For those Marines that were in Desert Storm, they got off the boats and went straight into the desert, right? Do not pass a go, do not do anything else. They went straight to the desert, and and the reason they did that was because of what had happened in Beirut. That we learned that it's very difficult to protect when civilians are around, and so we everywhere we go, force preservation with the the huge price that we paid is one of the first things, right, that haunts you when you go someplace. How do we protect everybody? And so, so we look back, and on this show, I've been fortunate to meet guys that were there and talk to them, and you're going to hear from a couple of them today. We did a battle study about Beirut with Brigadier General Ron Baskowski, and you'll hear him today. And then I played this interview about a month ago, but I'll play it again because I love Gospel. Matt Gospodinovich was killed in a car accident here in August. And he is one of those guys who you meet in the Marine Corps and, you're going to hear his voice. He's got, I think he's from Mississippi. He's got that southern drawl, but he wanted to be a Marine. He was in Beirut that day. And when the bomb, when that explosion happened, he was at his artillery battery's position. And he got in a truck, and he headed that way. And, he talked about it. And then his scuffles in life as he went home and, how do you sort it out? And so you're going to hear from Gospel again. And I can't tell you how happy it makes me to play it and how fortunate I was to cross paths with that guy. And because he's a reminder to me, as Jack Riley is always, as Bob Nielsen is, of what the incredible fraternity, the bond of the tribe that is the Marine Corps, how powerful the experience is on us, and how you see people continuing throughout their lives to honor that commitment, to hold the things that we hold dear, they continue to hold them dear, and it echoes through their life. So today is certainly a day that that will be forever emblazed in the hearts and the minds of anybody who is alive in the Marine Corps the day that these events happen. And they are memorialized at Camp Lejeune, not only on base, but on the highway outside of the base. There's a grove now that was planted, the Beirut Memorial Grove, I think it's called. And, when you see the memorial, I think it's to 261 Marines and sailors. The words you always see written are, "They came in peace." And, so today, we want to remember that here on All Marine Radio. In particular, if you know anybody who was there, reach out to them today and say, "Hey, you're in my thoughts today." If you know any of the families who had to live with that and how frustrating that must have been for them to have to deal with, really, the first major act of terrorism that the United States dealt with. And it would change the nation, forever. It would be an introduction to things that would happen in the future. And so Beirut's kind of a watershed event for a lot of different reasons. So today we will, of course, remember that. So we'll do that here in a bit. We'll check the news. We'll check the weather, and then we'll go to Beirut with Gospo and Ron Baskowski, Brigadier General, United States Marine Corps, retired. I tell the story that I met Ron when I was a second lieutenant. He was the first lieutenant. I think he'd been selected to captain. He'd come back to teach at the basic school. And so we were out doing, I think, squad in the attack. And squad in the attack, when you're learning how to be a member of the rifle squad. And you're learning how to attack things. And you essentially there's a circuit set up in the woods, and you go from this to that, and you attack. You go from that to that, and you attack. And you do it all day. It's called squatting the attack. And he had just got to the basic school. And this is the first time I ever remember seeing him. He came out, and he built the first terrain model I'd ever seen. Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. But I don't know if the instructors before him, they weren't into terrain models. But I remember him. He got sugar out of an MRE. He had some strings in his ass pack that we used to wear on our war belt. And it's essentially like a purse is what an ass pack is. And you have these suspenders that you wear as part of your war belt. And so on the back of it, you had your first aid kit. You know, you'd hang your canteens on either side of the first aid kit, kind of on the back end of your hips. If you had a pistol, which we didn't have because we were lieutenants, you hang it on there, you know, and whatever else they give you. So, right, your war belt. And it has suspenders on it. Well, the ass pack clips onto the back of the suspenders on the back side, right above your ass, hence fanny pack or ass pack. And it was, you know, and then it clipped onto your war belt. And what it did was allowed you to carry a whole bunch of stuff, like in your purse. And, you know, it could have been food, it could have been moleskin for your feet. Most guys threw an extra pair of socks and maybe an extra t-shirt rolled up in there in case they couldn't get to their stuff. And so it just, you know, helped you live. So out of his ass pack, he pulls sugar and string and even, I think, some cards that he had, 3x5 cards. And so he then begins to fashion the terrain, you know, to look like what we will see in the attack. And I'd never seen one. And then he used sugar to denote the road that was off on our left. I can still describe it to this day, right? He gathered some vegetation and he piled it in another line to say, this is the tree line. And I was like, looking at him like, who is this lieutenant, man? And Ron's about 5'7". You know, he's not a big guy. And had a dip in. And he, so when he gets ready to, you know, to critique the order and show us a train model, it was like the thing came alive. I was so impressed. So anyway, but Ron, Ron was a Beirut guy. He had just come from Beirut. And so when I called him to come on and talk, he said, yeah, Mac, I'd love to come on and talk. Not only about Beirut, but I'd also like to talk about, I know you talk about PTSD and post-combat related mental health. I'd also like to talk about that, if you don't mind. I said, no, man, not a bit. So you'll hear from Gospel, and then you'll hear from Ron Vaskowski. So anyway, good morning to you. I want to talk about a little bit about yesterday, doing post-traumatic winning for the first math intelligence group, and then for spouses last night. So good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. And on this day, this is dedicated to to a series of groups of people. One, to the sailors and Marines who were part of the operations in Beirut, right? What they had to live with was that they went there, they went in peace, and the world was changing, and we didn't understand it. And they made a huge sacrifice there, and then they were pulled out. So what was the fucking point? So to those who were there, who've had to live with that frustration, to the loved ones who lost members of their families that they loved dearly and couldn't and would never be able to replace, who've had to live with that anguish, this is dedicated to them. And I'd also like to dedicate it to Layla Brady, who's the behavioral health person at One Meth Information Group at Camp Pendleton, who's doing awesome stuff down there. And she was the reason that I went down there yesterday. So I want to dedicate this to her and then to all the Marines and their spouses that showed up yesterday. And I'll echo something that I said to everybody. Go change somebody's life. If you want to change your life, go touch somebody else's life. And you'll experience the transformational power of post-traumatic winning. And, and when you leverage the truth that comes out of our culture to change somebody's life, there's no feeling like that. So this is dedicated to those groups of people on this day, October 23rd, that we remember a huge sacrifice that Marines and sailors and their families made in Beirut in 1983.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. If you're young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
if you don't love your Marine, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marine. And the infantry got its name, infantry young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PSC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds to win. We got to win.
Now, I'm doing this a couple hours early because I've got to go to 29 Palms and do post-traumatic winning again. So, I'm going to do shithole weather from yesterday that people sent me. So, with apologies, all right? Currently, it is partly sunny and 54 in Quantico, sunny and 61 in Camp Lejeune, still dark in 29 Palms, 61 degrees there under clear skies. Pendleton, big fire at Pendleton yesterday, yeah, in the Zulu impact area. Santa Ana conditions, the weather was 90 degrees yesterday here in Southern California. But the Zulu impact area is pretty well boxed in by fire breaks, so nobody's really concerned. It burns on an annual basis, if not more often. So anyway, but you see huge smoke coming out of it. But clear, dark, and 54 at Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 75. Okinawa, dark clear in 75. And Ramadi in Iraq. Iraq says that American troops leaving Syria will not be allowed to stay in Iraq. Interesting. Right? Partly sunny in Ramadi. 85 degrees late in the afternoon, and early in the evening, a little bit further to the east, right, is Afghanistan, and it's cooled off there. Clear, dark, and 73 degrees in the provincial capital of Helmand Province, Lashkar Gah. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is dark, cloudy, and 61 degrees. Looking for a high of 85 today. A high of 94 with winds tomorrow, Thursday. A high of 90 on Friday. So, the Santa Ana winds and heat blowing out of the east here in Southern California now, which increases the fire season. And what you're seeing here in the state is Pacific Gas and Electric that will be probably, I don't know if they're already in bankruptcy because of the fires in Northern California that they were responsible for, sparking lines and things like that during these conditions, it's spread wildfire. They are now shutting off power in certain areas, right? Pretty amazing. Anyway, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to my dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in the air of this heartbreak.
So the aforementioned Colleen went with me last night to see Post-Traumatic Winning for the first time. Now, Colleen's heard of it, right? And she's around it, right? But yesterday's the first time she ever saw it in person. And, I don't know, there might have been about a dozen people last night, a dozen spouses that came to it. Some Marines came back to see it a second time, which is interesting. And so, you know, we did it and then hung out afterwards to talk to people and then got in the car and came home last night. And so we get in the car and I said, so what'd you think? And she said, it was different than I expected. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, you know, she said, I don't know how to explain it. She said, So I looked at her and said, use your words. Use your words. So she kind of hemmed and hawed and she said, well, you know, I kind of know, right, from hearing you tell stories and talk and things like that. She said, but it was so different sitting there. And what happened last night was I asked Allison, who you can hear, who did an interview called, you know, When Spouses Talk About Post-Traumatic Winning. And so if you want to listen to that, it's a pretty cool interview. So I found out Allison is now stationed out here. She saw it at Camp Lejeune last year, saw it again at the Cornerstone course where commanders go, and they go through like a 2-week symposium to get them ready to command. They and the sergeant majors that will be part of their command team go to a Cornerstone program that happens in Quantico. In fact, I'm going to go speak there again next week. So anyway, she saw it again there. And so Allison's seen it a couple times. And she's a great woman, right? And, but she's kind of a perfect person to talk about this, because the things that we talk about in post-traumatic winning are the two things you talk about. The two problems are, one, ignorance, right? You've heard me say this before, but there is no high school class. There's no college class about trauma. And so you deal with it on your own, and the people that go through it, they tend not to want to talk about it. Yeah. How crazy is that? So when you go through it, you know, a lot of times people go through on their own and they're scuffling to make sense of it, mostly on their own. You know, if you're fortunate, you have people like I did, like Gunny Y, you know, who walk in and help you. right? If you don't have any of those kind of people in your life, then, you know, you struggle with it on your own. But anyway, so Allison, and again, those of us, I think Marines, especially guys, when we go through stuff, we're prone not to talk about it because, you know, we get raised and we listen and we hear the stories of so-and-so came back from World War II and didn't talk about it. Okay, I guess that's the way it's supposed to be. Well, anyway, Allison was living that, right? Was living that. And, you know, with her husband. Just kind of being shut out of that part of his life. And then watching, you know, the turbulence that and the stress that that put on him. But not being able to go there with him. Right? And you can imagine the frustration of a spouse who lives that reality. And so I talk about that in Post-Traumatic Winning. Well, Allison did something about it, right? And she, so last night, in her relationship, she's the one I talk about that I say, you know, if I was you, I'd stop having sex with him. And I tell him, before we go there, we're going to go there. That's Allison, right? So Allison got up and spoke last night. So it was introduced, kind of interesting, Lieutenant Colonel Wolf, who's the XO of the information group at OneMap, he'd never spoken about the stuff that he got up and talked about yesterday in public. And he's a little bit nervous, and we were talking about it before. And so I told him, don't fuck it up, man. So then what was even, so last night, his wife came. And as he was starting to talk, he said, I've never talked about these things in public till today. And my wife and I have never talked about them. And so you're sitting there going, oh my God. No, but you know, you're watching people begin to live it. And you know that the truth is the only thing that's going to happen is their life is going to get better. Right? And the example of, all the people that you've heard on this program, the example of Eugene Sledge, what happens when he allows his wife into his life. The example of Ken Rogers, what happens when he allows Betty Rogers into his life. Right? And it's this story that it's the good side of all the bad things that the commandments address, right? The good side of those is if you do this, then this will happen. And so Allison's, she's great because that's what she and her husband went through. And so she got up last night and she talked about seeing it. And then she talked about struggling with what would I tell you sitting here tonight, who were in the same position that I was close to a year ago here. And she was, and then she said, and I wrote something down, I need to read it. And I was sitting like off to the side watching it. And I will tell you that, you know, I met Allison, right, and she was looking for answers. And now Allison's helping other people. Because Allison knows the path, right? It's not an easy path, and you got to struggle to stay on the path, right? But she knows. And so it was really cool when I asked her to do it. She goes, I would love to do it. And so she goes over to her purse and she pulls out these two pieces of paper. They were orange with something printed on. And she read it. And it was cool. It was so cool. And I thought it was so powerful. And so Colleen started talking about that. She said, so, I mean, I kind of knew, like, what you did. She said, but I didn't understand the impact it has on people. I said, pretty amazing, right? And she looked at me and she said, yes. She said, it was awesome. She said, so it's that, you know, it's... That's what I didn't get. So we had a cool conversation on the way home. And, you know, I did a few things different, than I normally do. And I think they made them better. I have to think them through because I'm headed out to 29 Palms on, you know, do they stay? Do they go? Do they get moved? As I refine this thing. And I have to shorten the presentation too. To me, it's too long. And even though I love everything, I love everything in it, right? But I've got to kind of maybe streamline some stuff and combine some stuff to make it a little bit more digestible and not as long. So anyway, no, but it was, as it always is. I mean, I woke up yesterday at 3:30 in the morning. I was fired up to do it, as I am every day. And then nothing but good things happened. I won't tell you who, but somebody very high up in the Pentagon contacted me yesterday and said, hey, I know you're going to be back here in D.C. I want to talk to you. So looking forward to that next week. And you know, another day closer to going and talking at the Air Force Academy and then going back to Cornerstone and then headed up to Minnesota State University, Mankato, to speak there on November 4th. So going to be a busy couple weeks here. And But looking forward to it. There is no, and Connie and I were talking about this yesterday. I said, can you see why this is so cool? She said, yes. And I told her, I said, Connie, look, we need to get a version of this into your school. And she said, I know. I said, and you need to make that happen. She said, okay. I said, so you need to go to them, and I don't know if they come and see it once, and then they'll see the power of it. And then we look at them and say, okay, tell us of this. What do you think is appropriate for high school students, you know, that it be allowed to be presented? This is the way the Marine Corps, you know, this is the way Marines deal with it. Is that not worthy of their, you know, of their consumption? Do you not think it would help? And certainly it would have to be modified. And I get that. You know, but, so that's the challenge. The challenge is to get it through educators. Let me tell you one other kind of epiphany that I had yesterday. You know, when you talk to Marines, they're young Marines and young people of this generation have been done wrong by our culture. Okay? They want to be good, but they don't know how to be good a lot of times. Okay? Because they have never, ever been allowed to fail. They, you know, adversity they're insulated from, consequences they're insulated from. And now you go out into the big bad world that there's nobody there protecting you anymore. And I mean, can you imagine that? Can you imagine? I mean, for instance, I mean, I joked that, you know, when I came home from school, right? And I either put on my cut-off jeans in the summer and got on my Stingray, my gold Stingray with a banana seat on it. And I put my glove on my, you know, in my over my handlebars. I put a ball in the spokes, and I grabbed a bat, and we were going to go down and play at the school. And then from there, God only knows where we were going, okay? We couldn't cross Franklin Boulevard, and we couldn't cross Florin Road, and my mom used to tell me to stay out of the creek, which I routinely violated, okay, and don't go near the interstate, which I respected. So, but inside of that, you know, we as young people were marauding around, and if you went to a park where you didn't know kids, I mean, there was a chance that you were going to get in a fight, and if there was a fight, you were expected to fight. And so you, as a 10-year-old, you were rolling around town, manning up, because that's what kids did. Well, I mean, think of the world that they live in. Your mom takes you to the park and stays there with you. Right? Every practice you go to is organized with adults there. That was like, I played baseball for hours and hours. I played sports for hours and hours. Adults were rarely involved in it. Only when I went to practice, organized practice. The rest of the time, they weren't anywhere near that stuff. That's not how kids do it today. And so it hit me that we've done them a disservice because the life lessons that we all had, I had, going into being a leader in the Marine Corps, all served me well. They don't have those life experiences. And they're looking for, how do I do this? And so they're starting from further back on the learning curve. Because the basic things we would about the that we learned about the rough and tumble world out there, They don't know, because the world hasn't been rough and tumble for them. And here's the part that irritates me. That's not their fault. That's the fault of their parents, right? Our school systems, to me, are hurting kids because they don't allow them to experience consequences. And they raise them to go into this pristine world where people are going to care about your feelings. And then you get there, right? What the fuck, right? What the fuck? Nobody cares about my feelings. Oh, what a shock, right? How do you come down off that? Where do you go with that? That's the delta, right? That's the delta relative to the difference relative to that they have to make up. So to me, the DNA that's special that brings you through door number four into the Marine Corps, arguably it's more special today, because the young Marines now live in a culture that doesn't embrace most of the qualities that you find, you know, in Marines. Not only doesn't embrace, but turns its back on that. And so so it's interesting. So to join the Marine Corps, right? I mean, is a huge step in somebody's life. It's a huge step. And so, but they operate from farther back. They operate from farther back. So it's interesting to talk to them, right? And as they hear this, and they want to be better leaders, right? But they've got a ways to go, and they know it, right? They know it, which is pretty cool. All right, let's check some of these headlines as we head towards the sequence. The sequence of this is going to be, you're going to hear the Battlefield Study with Ron Baskowski, and then on the backside of that interview, you'll hear Matt Gospodinovich, God rest his soul. And so you're going to hear... you'll hear those in sequence, right? You'll hear those in sequence. So from Stars and Stripes, Top of the Fold, Iraq gives U.S. troops from Syria 4 weeks in country before they must leave. U.S. troops leaving Syria are only transiting through Iraq territory and will depart within 4 weeks, the country's defense minister said. Interesting. Another headline, missing West Point cadet found dead after a day-long search. Cadet Cade Kunita, 20, had been missing since Friday. And we talked about this. He was missing along with his rifle. He's from Gardena, California, which is not too far from here. The cause of his death is still under investigation. No foul play is expected. Normally that's a boilerplate for... he took his own life. He was found after a massive search across the 16,000-acre West Point training area involving 130 soldiers from the 23rd Military Police Company from Fort Drum. Multiple law enforcement teams, search dogs, and military helicopters from the 2nd Aviation Detachment from Fort Stewart's National Guard Base. So, anyway, sad ending to that story. Just sucks, right? This stuff sucks. But you gotta do something about it. And again, better endurance is not the answer. You gotta teach people how to use trauma to transform their life. And that's where this has to go. And there's no doubt in my mind after I've done this now for a year. Let's see. From USNI News. The carrier Ford may not deploy until 2024. A third weapons elevator has been certified. The Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier, right, has been a nightmare for the Navy. Right? Has been a nightmare for the Navy. To say the least. It may not be ready to deploy until 2024, further complicating the Navy's persistent problems of generating deployable carriers from the East Coast. Its original planned deployment was 2018, but the timeline has continued to slip due largely to developmental delays in the new technologies that were included aboard the first in-class nuclear aircraft carrier. The delays were also partly due to the Department of Defense's decision for the Ford to undergo a full ship shock trials before its first deployment. The news of the later deployment came during a Tuesday House Armed Services Readiness Committee subcommittee hearing meeting in an exchange between Naval Sea Systems Command Head Vice Admiral Tom Moore and Representative Elaine Luria. Quote, the original deployment was 2018. The best estimates we're looking at is 2024. Luria asked Moore during a hearing. I think we'll beat that, Moore said. We're going to pull back as far to the left as we can, but I think we're going to beat that. The initial estimate, can you imagine that 6 years late? 6 years late. I mean, honestly, it's amazing. How do you screw it up that bad? Another report, Pentagon falling behind using artificial intelligence on the battlefield. Yeah, no kidding. Pentagon acting alone. Google won't help. They're too busy helping China. Right. So, then there's another story. Sailors and Marines adjusting to the brutal reality of high-end warfare. Written by Sam Legrone. And he's writing it from aboard the amphibious assault ship USS Bataan, the ongoing graduation exercise for the Bataan Amphibious Ready Group, ARG, and the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit will not only get the 4,500 sailors and Marines ready to deploy later this year, but also has started a conversation on the deck plate level about how the services will fight together in the future. The ARG-MU Amphibious Training Unit exercise was the first since the Marine Corps unveiled Commandant David Berger's command guidance for the service. And then it goes on to quote some of the Marines. Quote, we've been anchored kind of to the Arabian Gulf for quite some time. Captain Lance Lesher, the Commodore of the amphibious squadron, said, now, and with great power competition, the emphasis is that we're not limited to one Pacific area, the Baltic, the Med, the Arabian Gulf, the Indian Ocean. What I'm getting from my bosses consistently is we are worldwide deployable and we need to do those missions. Colonel Trevor Hall quoted here, as a naval force, we share in this. Naval warfare is brutal. We have seen that in the past, which we may not be as accustomed to as it was in recent times. Meaning, you know, we've gone wherever we wanted to do in the Middle East and done whatever we wanted in the past. Maybe that's not the way it goes in the future. I was going to be critical of Kyle Carpenter's book, but maybe I won't. Headline, Call Your Mom and Other Life Wisdom Shared by a Marine Medal of Honor Recipient in a New Book. He's written a new book, and I'm trying to get him on. You know, again, F-18 man and our other air officer, both F-18 guys, they're the reasons that Kyle Carpenter's alive. Yeah. Yep. So there's a link here. He's written a book, You're Worth It, Building a Life Worth Fighting For. Carpenter imparts the wisdom he learned on the way with books like You're More Than a Ribbon Rack or a Resume and Call Your Mom. What happens if you don't have a mom? What happens if your mom doesn't function like that? Who do you call then? Who do you call then? Top five stories in the early bird. Number one, Secretary Esper says troops in Syria will temporarily go to Iraq before returning to the U.S. Wait a minute. I thought they were going to stay in eastern Syria to protect the oil fields. I thought that was the big announcement Lindsey Graham made yesterday. I guess I don't rightly understand, so I guess we'll find out. Number two, U.S. military struggles to find a strategy amid sudden policy changes in CENTCOM. Again, the dysfunction on the eastern side of the Potomac, in particular, the shit show that is the President of the United States. Right? No matter how much I may like some of his policies, right? Straight up shit show. Right? So that's code, right? U.S. military struggles to find a strategy amid sudden policy changes at CENTCOM. That means the president is not very predictable, the president's not very consistent, and they don't know what to do. So I just got my secret decoder ring out for everybody. Number three, West Point cadet identified. Number four, Taliban says new intra-Afghan peace talks will be held in China. Yeah, take that, United States. So wait a minute. They're going to negotiate with who? The government? They said the government was not legitimate. So, again, the games that people play. Number five, Secretary of Defense recuses himself from a troubled Pentagon contract. And he's doing that because his son's part of that contract. So, yeah, nepotism ripe in American news these days. Headlines from Syria and Turkey. Number one, Russia-Turkey seal power in northeastern Syria with accord after American troops withdrawal. The leaders of Russia and Turkey announced an agreement for their two countries to jointly patrol almost the entire northeastern Syrian border after withdrawal of Kurdish fighters. Next headline from the Associated Press, what Trump gets wrong about war with the Islamic State. Next headline from a website called The Hill. Trump's Syria envoy says he wasn't consulted on the troop withdrawal. That's always positive. Again, from The Hill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other top Republicans on Tuesday introduced a resolution warning the Trump administration against withdrawing U.S. troops from northern Syria. Next headline from The Hill again. Pence on Syria, quote, our troops are coming home. That's awesome, Mike. Great job. Right. Next headline from Reuters. Russia warns Syrian Kurdish YPG must pull back or face the Turkish army. Yeah, it tends not to work like that, man. It's just memo to the Russians. Remember Afghanistan? That's waiting for you. That's waiting for you. Right. Next headline from Reuters. For Syrian Kurds, a leader's killing deepened sense of betrayal by the United States. Kurdish politician Hevrin Khalaf spent the final months of her life building a political party that she hoped would help shape Syria's future, drawing the attention of U.S. officials who said it would have a say in what happened once the war ended. How does this end? As recently as October 3rd, State Department officials reassured her at a meeting that Washington would safeguard northern Syria from a threatened Turkish assault by mediating between Kurdish-led forces and Ankara, the capital of Turkey, right? According to a colleague who was present. Days after the meeting, President Donald Trump announced that U.S. forces would quit the region, leaving it vulnerable to attack on Turkey. Kurdish fighters in northern Syria, key allies of the U.S. In the U.S. battle against the Islamic State, said rebels fighting on the Turkish side murdered Khalaf. She was 34 years old. She was slain on October 12th, along with a driver and aide, when Turkish-backed fighters stopped their SUV on the M4 highway in northern Syria, according to the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces and officials in her party. Not a good story. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear Ron Baskowski. We'll do a battlefield study of Beirut, courtesy of him. And then on the backside of General Baskowski, you're going to hear Matt Gospodinovich. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.